Hi, I'm Julian Fleischer. You are about to listen to the podcast version of the Naked American Songbook. Now, due to copyright law, we can't provide all the music for on-demand listening. It sucks. We're bummed about it, too, and we're working on it. But for the moment, you can still hear my conversation with Chris Noth and get a little taste of the music that he loves. So unbuckle up, because here we go. Greetings, friends, and welcome. One of the ways we reveal who we are is by sharing. Sharing the things that we love. Nowadays, we share all the time. We share online, we share on our phones, we share our status, our photos, our lunches, our brunches, our workouts, our weddings, our divorces. It's how we get to know each other. Here, we share songs. I'm Julian Fleischer, and this is the Naked American Songbook. Now, you might be asking yourself, what is the Great American Songbook? When did it begin? When does it end? Who wrote it? Who gets to decide? Well, here we're not exactly scholars, so we don't exactly care. No, here at Naked American headquarters, we care less about the when and the who, and more about the how and the why. How do these songs get into our hearts, and why do they stay there for our whole lives, and sometimes beyond? After all, the melody does linger on. We ask people, pretty much like the rest of us, who give a damn, who love these songs, and who are willing to expose a little bit of who they are by sharing the tunes to which they're devoted and the stories behind that devotion. To get us started, we thought we'd go big. Very big. Mr. Big. That's right. If you've been near a TV set in the last, 20 years, then you know Chris Noth.
Kick your shoes off, baby.
From Law & Order, from Sex and the City, from The Good Wife, and he is a deep lover of this music, specifically, and perhaps not surprisingly, Frank Sinatra. And he very kindly dropped by the studio with a couple of records to share with us. I'm eager for you to hear them. But to get the ball rolling, allow me to be the first to take off a layer or two and expose a little bit of my initial encounters with the Sinatra songbook. Now, when I first arrived here in New York a bunch of years ago, it was to become an actor, which it didn't take very long to realize was a terrible idea. So I did the next logical thing and became a singer. Now, it wasn't long before I nabbed a gig singing with a big band in the Edison Ballroom in Midtown, and they wanted a lot of Sinatra music out of me, but having not really grown up a Sinatra fan, I was lacking in the information department. I didn't exactly have a lot of great Sinatra charts in my head. But luckily, right around the same time, a couple of very big collections came out on CD, the Reprise Collection and the Capitol Collection. And the first track from those CDs that caught my ear was Frank's rendition of a song called You're Nobody Till Somebody Loves You. Now, this is not exactly the deepest or, frankly, the most reassuring sentiment in the history of lyric writing. And frankly, Sinatra himself doesn't sound convinced in the first chorus. It sounds more like he just cracked open a fortune cookie and he's trying to take it seriously. But then the second chorus kicks in. The key changes. The horns get louder. The stakes just seem to get higher. The track is pulsing along now and swinging with a new urgency. And above it all, Sinatra is soaring, preaching in a way that has you believing this might actually just be the most important advice you've ever heard. And maybe it is. Later in life now, I ponder the question a little differently. Maybe if it is true, then somebody out there does love me because I am, as far as I can tell, somebody. And not just anybody. I'm Julian Fleischer, and this is the Naked American Songbook.
You're a nobody till somebody loves you. You're nobody till somebody cares. You may be king, you may possess the world and its gold.
Need I repeat, you are nobody till somebody loves you. That's what Frank Sinatra and songwriters Larry Stock, Russ Morgan, and James Cavanaugh would have us believe. I would add that you're nobody till you've shared something meaningful about yourself with someone. On the Naked American Songbook, of course, we share songs. Ergo here, you're nobody till somebody knows what songs mean the most to you. That last one was one of mine, so perhaps you're starting to get the picture about me. But let's now turn our attention to our guest. the one and only Chris Noth, who you will know from...
Kick Your Shoes Off, Baby.
Popular culture all over the world at all times in the last decade, I would say.
Oh, no.
You've had a good run.
Yeah, it's been some good shows, I guess. Good ensembles, you know.
Good ensemble, good writing.
I can't escape myself on TV.
No, you can't.
Watch myself grow old. I get it all that all the time. Oh, God, I saw Law & Order. You looked like a teenager.
Yeah, it's got to hurt.
But it's like 1990, seems like yesterday, actually.
Now, I refuse to believe that any time has passed since the time that I graduated from college. I certainly
exactly.
don't behave any better than
no.
I did.
No, I mean, time is a subject that's very interesting. It's moving fast, and yet in my head, not at all.
And on that subject, I'm not going to waste any time, Chris. Mm. We could talk about your career all day long.
No,
but we're here
so
to talk about the Great American Songbook.
Much more interesting.
So let's just load up our first song, which is a favorite of yours, a Sinatra tune. You're a big Sinatra fan, which
huge.
Seems fitting. You have a kind of Sinatra swagger to you, you know?
Well, my parents were, that was in my house playing all the time as a kid.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So that's where it found its way in?
I would imagine it found its way in the same way the Beatles would find its way into kids, you know, my kid when he gets in about 5 years. Great music finds its way to you.
Through your family.
Through family or, in those days, the radio.
Groovy. Which... Well, you brought me a medley of two tunes that he often sang together. It almost became a set piece for him. The Man That Got Away, It Never Entered My Mind.
Those are songs that he picked.
To marry together.
His favorites.
Wow.
Yeah, the whole album are his choice songs, actually, that he has a special place in his heart for.
And is there anything you want us to be listening
well,
for?
Well, what I love about the whole album, and especially about this song, is it's later in his years, and there's a little more Jack Daniels in his voice, a little more experience. It's not that lovely melodies that he sang in the 40s and 50s, which I really like to hear the experience of his life in the song, and you really hear it here. This song almost gets morbid.
Yeah.
But I mean, a great sad song, which I love, is the kind where you can belly up to the bar and think about and hear a song like this and not have to pay the price of your heartache, but remember it maybe with a small smile on your face. You know, it's that kind of thing for me, which I have a lot of.
Wow. Nicely put. Thank you very much for that. Let's listen to Sinatra singing The Gal That Got Away, and It Never Entered My Mind.
The night is bitter. The stars have lost their glitter. The winds grow colder, suddenly you're a lot older, and all because
oh, it's amazing.
That was
just an
Frank
experience.
Sinatra.
I mean, ugh.
There's a real three-act play being told
yeah,
there.
It's all, you said it. It's almost operatic.
Yeah. Well, he was essentially an opera singer. I mean, I think...
Really?
I don't mean literally, but that was the power that he brought. As was Judy Garland, who
right.
you know, who introduced this song. She was essentially the pop version of an
That's
opera
right,
singer.
You're right.
There's something soaring and over the top, something that reaches heights that you just can't reach on a regular stage.
And the song has so many different levels of...
It's interesting that you refer to it also as a song, because it really is two songs. It's a medley of two songs smashed together.
I've always done it.
It's like soliloquy.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's just an incredibly long, beautiful story that has many different chapters,
yes.
some big, some small, and he manages to encapsulate all these contradictory feelings in one musical
that
gesture.
That sort of defiance.
Yeah.
And then falling back on his knees,
yeah,
you
it's
know.
Great. One of his daughters, I remember hearing, sadly, and I'm embarrassed to admit, I don't remember whether it was Tina or Nancy, said that he was a winner who identified with losers. Mm. And I always thought that was a really brilliant and economical encapsulation of what made him great.
I don't know if there could ever be a Frank Sinatra again.
No. It seems impossible.
And it's not just because of his uniqueness, but because the world has changed in such a way that I don't think the way the world and society and culture is now can produce that kind of a singer.
Everything's been balkanized now. You know, you like this, so you go over there and listen to that, and you stay over there and you'll listen to that. I mean, the timing was right for Sinatra because
right.
there were so few channels.
I think we have a completely different experience of life now,
right.
too.
There simply weren't as many choices. There wasn't as much music. Right. There weren't as many different avenues to go down. Yeah. American popular culture was a received culture, and it was, you know, we received it from the companies that delivered it to us. And he was, you know, he invented, practically invented the LP, you know. Mm-hmm. So he was the right person for the job.
But the lyrics also, the expression of song
right.
is completely – it's still vivid and alive for me, but I don't hear it being written today like that at all.
Well, it's an interesting question that you and I were talking about off camera, as it were, here on the Naked American Songbook, where we are, I guarantee you, quite naked.
We're naked, yeah.
And we're naked. And we were talking about what makes a standard, like why these songs seem to have this timeless quality that songs that get written today seem not to have, although then you start talking about the great songwriters, the Beatles, the James Taylors, even people writing today, you know, the Stephen Merritts of the world, producing timeless music, but it's timeless in a different way. Am I right? Like, what is it in your mind, Chris Noth, that makes a standard? Why are these songs special?
That's a good question.
Well, hurry up and give me an answer.
I know. It's because it's not emotion thrown at you. It's not just confessional.
No.
There's a real artistry to the compositions.
Well, I also think it had to do with the fact that the writers were not the singers, mm-hmm. that somehow they're aiming for another voice, another singer. Somehow I think that made a difference in how they wrote. I think that the songwriting had a kind of universality to it when these writers, the Arlens and the Mercers and the Kahns and the Schwartzes, were busy writing for other people and not themselves. So when Joni picked up her guitar to write a song, it was really about her, from her, for her, by her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And somehow true. The lack of an extra step made it seem less available to other singers.
Mm-hmm. A lot of these guys wrote for musicals, the American right. musical.
You have got a voice for radio, my friend.
And how about that?
You look great naked, so thanks
that
for joining.
Tang of gin and vermouth.
Well, this is from his – this is the golden era for me. This is Sinatra at his best.
Those are those pictures of him with the hat, you uh-huh. know, when he's in the studio.
That Fly Me to the Moon moment with the, you know, the brushes mm-hmm. on the snare mm-hmm. and the flutes. I mean, that was
– there's
that
a
was
really a... funny song called Wives and Lovers. Do you know that one where he's talking about basically in the song to the wife, hey, listen, baby. Step it up a little. Just because you're my wife, you know, you still have to look good and act like my lover.
Good Lord, do we have this number available? Because I would be very
it's
happy.
Really, it would take a lot of women off probably, but it was very of the time.
Good.
Day after day, there are girls at the office, and the men will always be men. Don't send him off with your hair still in curlers. You may not see him again. Wives should always be lovers.
There's another song from that era, too, that he does. Oh, gosh. It's got When Love Congeals, It Soon Reveals the Faint Aroma of Performing Seals.
That I have never...
You know this song.
When love congeals, it soon reveals the faint aroma of performing seals.
Come on, that is a great line. It's a similar vibe.
Astounding line. I mean, it's just a coalition of so many different... Kick your shoes off, baby.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in there. I'm sad that we can't call that world our own anymore.
Kick
but
your shoes
in many ways,
off,
we've paid the price for having shed the skin of those years, and now we are a better people for it.
But not as much fun.
If you're just joining us, I'm Julian Fleischer, and this is the Naked American Songbook. On this, our maiden voyage, we've been talking with television's own Chris Noth, and he's going to come back soon and tell us more about the songs and singers he loves, including, surprise, surprise, Laura Nyro and Joni Mitchell. But before we get back to Chris, I'd like to hear from you, because let's face it, I could sit here all day interviewing celebrities about who they are and the songs that they love, but what I really want to know about is you. Who are you, and what songs do you love? So get on the Naked American listener line at 347-229-1343. That's 347-229-1343. And share a little bit about who you are by telling me about the songs you love and the skivvies that you're sporting while you're loving them.
My name is Matt Levine. I live in San Francisco, and I'm wearing a pair of fetching black boxer briefs with red stripes. My favorite song is Fly Me to the Moon. The first time I heard it was my dad playing it on the piano with a large glass of Dewars in his hand, which was about as omnipresent as the black and white on the keys. And I just love it because the optimism in the song is a nice antidote to my rather dour Russian DNA.
Fly me to the moon, let me play among the stars, let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby.
Good God Almighty, even people who don't like Frank Sinatra like that recording of Fly Me to the Moon. Thank you, Matt of San Francisco, for suggesting it. It certainly is optimistic, and I can see why you find it a tonic. But I think it will be hard for anyone to come out of that track feeling blue. And in my opinion, much of the credit goes to its arranger, one Quincy Jones. That's right. Perhaps you've heard of him. Quincy would go on to produce, among other things, a little album known as Thriller for a little singer named Michael Jackson. But before he masterminded the biggest selling album in history, Quincy Jones was orchestrating undisputed classics for Sinatra's great collaboration with Count Basie. Now, let me encourage the rest of you to do like Matt did in his fetching black boxer briefs with the blue trim and call the Naked American listener line and share the tunes that you're listening to and the skivvies you're wearing while you're listening to them at 347-229-1343. Once again, 347-229-1343 is the listener line. And you can always tweet us at Naked Songbook and find us on Facebook as well. In just a moment, we'll return to our chat with actor Chris Noth. Did you know he starred in a made-for-TV movie with the one and only Natalie Cole? Neither did I. And I'm still not sure whether Chris was the hero or the villain. I'm Julian Fleischer, and this is the Naked American Songbook. You are listening to the Naked American Songbook. I'm Julian Fleischer. Now, back to my conversation with television's Chris Noth, who is just regaling me with tales of his television movie co-starring one of my all-time singing sensations, the incandescent Natalie Cole. Wait, were you in her movie or was she in your movie?
No, she was in mine, so to speak, but she played a part of...
Did she play Natalie Cole?
Abducted, A Father's Love. That's where I kidnapped my own daughter because my wife's an alcoholic.
Are you making this up?
No, I'm not making it up. It was back in the days when they did TV movies, and I nabbed one.
Yes, I'd like some information about your group.
I'll bet you would, you son of a bitch.
And she played a woman who facilitated a place for me to go and hide while I went through the legal ramifications.
Wait, I'm sorry. Were you the good guy or the bad guy?
I was a good guy doing a bad thing, but not really a bad thing because of the situation.
Damn that Tribune. What?
Oh, you got that backwards, lady. I swear to God.
Backwards? What's that supposed to mean?
Just what it sounds like. And I wouldn't be calling you if I didn't need your help.
Okay. Run over to Union Station, main platform, wait near the payphone.
Are you setting me up?
Wait there. I'll call you in 10 minutes. 10 minutes, okay? Anybody else answers, I hang up. It's over.
It was deep. It was a CBS TV movie.
A lot
deep,
to dig in, man. Do you still get residuals off of that?
No,
do you get a check
once in
a while? Like, oh, yeah, the Natalie Cole movie. I'm going to go buy
Maybe
myself
for
a steak.
30 cents or something.
Yeah.
I get those checks. 7 cents for a movie you didn't, you know.
If you get a check for 7 cents, can you imagine what my checks look like?
I like to frame those.
Don't. Just take me out. Was she great? Was she nice? Do you have nice memories
Absolutely
of Natalie?
Nice,
I want to
yeah.
hear about Natalie
She's a
Cole.
Good actress.
Oh, I'm sure.
I'm surprised I haven't seen her in more stuff. She was excellent.
I would also like to say that the album she put out right after The Unforgettable called Take a Look is another big band album of standards that is absolutely one of my favorite records of all time. And if you'll indulge me, I'd like to play you
I'd love to hear
track from Take a Look. It's the great Too Close for Comfort. This album was the follow-up to Unforgettable, which, I don't know, sold like 10 million records. And it's better than Unforgettable. And I'd like to play for you Too Close for Comfort.
Be wise, be smart, behave your heart. Don't upset your cart when he's so close.
That is a tune. Natalie Cole singing Too Close for Comfort from Take a Look.
Cornucopia of horns.
Yes. There's a lot of brass in that.
She have a voice.
Oh, she's the best, man. And such rhythm.
And she's still singing.
And it was her mother, by the way, who convinced her father to start singing because she recognized that there was a bigger career for him in singing.
He was an incredible musician who we all know him as a singer. But
right. Yeah. Crazily, as wonderful a singer as he was, and he's easily one of the greats, his piano playing is what set him apart from everybody
else. Do you
else.
Think that today in the environment we're in that we're losing the history of our great American songwriters?
No, I don't think so, actually. And part of the reason I'm enjoying doing this show is it turns out a lot of people care deeply about this music, care deeply about these songs, and enjoy listening to them. So I think it's too early to sign the death warrant for this catalog.
Well, I hope we never
and
do.
Clearly, if you look at the great pop stars of the day, they all eventually come back to it. You know, the Rod Stewarts and the... Yeah. You know, Dylan just did his own record of
did
those
you
Sinatra
hear it?
Tunes. I did. I'm glad he did it. Right. I'm not going to listen to it on my ride upstate. You know what I'm saying?
I've got you under my skin.
It seems a little like a Saturday Night Live sketch to me. You know, like, well, what if we had Dylan singing Porter? I got you. I mean, I don't exactly feel like we need this.
Right. Right.
And which is one of the complications of having had them recorded by the greats, by the Ellas and the Sarah Vaughans and the Dinah Washingtons and the Billie Holidays and, of course, the Frank Sinatras. It's sort of difficult to think like, well, who else could do this better? You know, like, but part of the beauty of it, like classical music, is they bear up under a lot of different abuse from a lot of different kinds of singers. That's the beauty of the song.
Well, I mean, for me, the difference is, especially with Sinatra and the others, is a... There's an
the
emotion.
Others. The others. And, I just named some very important people.
No, but I was going to go through a list, and I didn't want to do that.
But you told me you don't like to listen to the ladies. I'm surprised.
Well, no, I do, but I don't find the same emotional connection to some. I mean, Billie Holiday.
Why? You mean there's a quality of suffering that you miss? Is that what you're saying?
Don't do this to me.
You're naked now. We're going to start probing.
No, but, you know, if I'm going to go to that, I go to Joni Mitchell or Laura Nero.
Yes, of course. But before we get to Joni, I would like to take a brief stop on Ricky Lee Jones Island.
I'm a huge fan.
I actually saw her. This isn't a secondhand story. I saw her abuse a band on stage.
Oh, really?
Like, just get up out of her chair and start yelling at the drummer, like standing next to him, like she took his tambourine and started banging it at him for tempo. It was crazy.
That'd be a lot of fun to watch.
But boy, is she a superstar when it comes to singing and songwriting. I mean, her first album, Ricky Lee Jones, it's got Chuckie's in Love on it and Company. And oh my God, that's a Desert Island disc for me. Absolute. But she put out a record, I don't know, 20 years ago called Pop Pop. A beautiful record of pop songs recorded with a very small trio, guitar and bass based. And her version of Bye Bye Blackbird is among my favorites of all time. I'd like you to listen to it. Tell me what you think. You're listening to Julian Fleischer and the Naked American Songbook. I'm here with my guest, the lovely Chris Noth. We are naked as jaybirds, not to be confused with the blackbirds we're going to hear about in this next tune.
I'll be back later on after my flight when I'm coming down to the little blackbird, bye-bye. But I'll be seeing you a little later, don't worry about me. I'll be seeing you a little later, blackbird, bye-bye.
I like that end. Does she, the whole album?
It sounds very much
jazz.
Like that. It's jazz. Inflected renditions of American popular standards. But there's some deep cuts. Like, she looked for some really interesting tunes that you wouldn't necessarily expect to hear. And, you know, she gives it her own spin, which is always so exciting and so musical. I've seen her many times live, and they're always some of the best concerts you'll ever see. So she did perform at your place, The Cutting Room?
Years ago, at the old Cutting Room.
So what happened? You were like, I think I need to have a jazz club.
No, it was a rock and roll club, actually. And it was just kind of a... My accountant knew all the players that were going to do this and said, do you want to go in on this?
I said, you need a write-off.
Yeah, right. Let me throw a few in here. And then it just fell apart really fast until Steve Walter, who is the Cutting Room, he's the guy that has kept it together. The other guys were kind of flaky, and he and I realized that it could be a great thing. And, you know, it lived for a while on 24th Street till what happens to this everyone else in the city, the landlord, you go from paying $12,000 a month rent to $50,000, so right. We had to move.
Oof.
And now we're over on 32nd Street, Park Avenue South. But it's a challenge, actually, in Manhattan to keep a live music place alive.
Well, why is that? Well, I mean, this is New York City. There was a time when, you know, 52nd Street had 40 clubs up and down one block. Mm-hmm. So why now? What do you think?
Well, yeah, what happens to everything? It evolves, but it evolves, unfortunately, today into sort of corporate eateries. Mm-hmm. And we're alone, afloat in a city of, you know, bistros and banks and pharmacies.
Do you think there's just not an appetite for mm-hmm. live music like there used to be?
Well,
like
I mean, people we just... know that there's a lot of great music out there. It's kind of, how do you find it? I mean, I grew up with the radio.
Right.
You were joined by millions of other people to being brought up by, you know, each couple of months a new Beatles song would mm-hmm. come and you waited fervently for that to happen.
Well, this is what I was saying earlier about Sinatra. There was a kind of received quality to the culture. Like, there were very few outlets. So there were three TV networks. Mm-hmm. There were five record labels. And, you know, they sort of decided what was out there. And we all got to listen to it at the same time. Now, mm-hmm. on the other side, I also feel that the loss of the record store itself is a big loss to music. Because I think a trip to the temple, as it were, mm-hmm. to thumb through, you know, the liturgy, as it were.
Gosh, even CDs. I mean, you can't find those anymore. There's, either.
It doesn't smell like anything. It doesn't feel like anything.
And let's face it, the experience of radio is you know, for the
present
for,
company accepted. Thank
no,
you very much.
No, little niches like this. But, I mean, if you try to listen to Most FM, it's you're giving yourself an enormous headache.
I want to talk about an artist we mentioned earlier, Joni Mitchell, as a candidate for induction into the Firmament of Greats. And you wanted to play a song of hers that is a deep cut. Not a lot of people listen to, but I share my love, your love.
It's one of her earlier compositions.
Called Cactus Tree.
Right. And what's great about it is today it would be a man writing about this. The subject would be a woman. She is reversing that.
You're exactly right. Well, that's Joni. She's a triple Scorpio.
Is she really? I'm a Scorpio too.
Me too.
Right?
Oh my God, we're all Scorpios.
We're like really vindictive if someone turns the wrong.
Yeah, but we're also we tell people who they are. We show mm-hmm. them how to be themselves and how to, frankly, how to have sex.
And we have a lot of secrets.
That's our thing, man. Scorpio. But you're right in noting that she writes about herself without any regard for what the gender roles are. She's just talking about mm-hmm. her story. Mm-hmm. Let's listen to Cactus Tree from the live album, Miles of Isles, a landmark recording. And bear in mind that what you're listening to is live.
He has kissed her with his freedom. He has heard her off to starboard. In the breaking and the breathing of the water. A man who's climbed a mountain and he's calling out her name.
That's Joni Mitchell in open D tuning.
Don't you just miss the guitar and piano instead of synthesizers and machines? Like, just an artist with guitars.
Well, I hear a lot of that. They're out there, man. I need to spend some time showing you who's around, because there's a lot of great people playing acoustically around town. Really good. Mm-hmm. It's hard to have a blockbuster now. If you're talking about what's showing up on the radio, then you're not in luck. But you got to kind of just prick up your ears a little bit and decide you're interested, and then you'll find it. I'll send you some stuff that you'll enjoy. Chris Noth, thank you so much for coming and being on the Naked American Songbook with me, Julian Fleischer, your host. I want to just find out what you're up to now. Like, well, you did two enormously successful series. What's up now?
Well, so I have just finished doing Faustus at CSC Rep.
Oh, that was great. You were terrific in that.
And
what are you, crazy? Why would you choose that? You're just looking for something incredibly difficult and draining.
Yeah, something
to do 8 times a week.
Slaps me around and it's kind of like a mountain. Yeah, I think I'll try to climb that, and then you see all the dead bodies.
The skeletons in the closet. So thank you, Chris. I'm going to take us out now with another singer that you really revere. Now, I don't know her terribly well. I mean, I like her, but I'm not steeped in her the way that you are. Mm. Tell me a little bit about Laura Nyro.
Laura Nyro wrote a lot of hits that other people made hits. She was one of the original. She was right there with Carole King and Joni Mitchell.
Yeah.
She is an unsung hero. She is incredible. Now, this song that we're playing, though, is her early material, The Fifth Dimension Has Done, and The Fifth Dimension has done many of her songs. The feel of it is so buoyant and uplifting, and the lyrics are
Insane.
Insane and poetic.
What
and
does it mean? What is a stone soul?
I don't
picnic?
Know, but isn't it a wonderful, you know,
something about like a
alliteration that is, you don't have to know what
well,
it is.
Well, two of the three words start with S, so it's
a little bit of alliteration there. Stone soul.
A little alliteration.
A little alliteration and a cornucopia of sound.
And she sounds unhinged. I mean, she always sounds like she's about to fly into a million.
Her voice is operatic, frankly. It has a huge range.
Yeah.
But this is a happy song.
It is.
It really is.
And I'm glad you brought it for us to
take
us out.
It's a kind of thing that the Fifth Dimension could do, which is why they picked it. And it's very pop. You would hear this on the radio, and you would feel good when you heard it.
I remember being surprised to discover that the Fifth Dimension had black people in it, because it sounded so white. They were like the white Earth, Wind, and Fire or something.
Marilyn McCoo.
But we're not going to listen to them. We're going to listen to the original Laura Nyro recording of Stone Soul Picnic.
I hope you like it.
And let me say once again, Chris Noe, thank you so much for joining me here on the Naked American Songbook. I really appreciate it. Say it again.
A real honor to be here.
There you go.
Can you surrey? Can you picnic? Whoa, can you surrey? Can you picnic? Come on, come on and surrey down to a stone soul picnic.
Can you surrey down
to a stone soul picnic? There'll be lots of...
Laura Nyro was only 20 years old when she invited us to Surrey down to a Stone Soul picnic. What exactly did she mean? Well, that I can tell you in three words. I don't know. But even if I did know, I wouldn't tell you, because it's for you to decide. As Chris Noth did, our special guest on this, the maiden voyage of the Naked American Songbook, I'd like to thank Chris for coming down to the studios here and sharing that and a bunch of other terrific songs and the music that make him who he is today. And come back next week when my guest will be Martha Plimpton, star of stage, screen, and even a couple of nightclubs along the way. She brings all of her signature passion, zeal, brilliance, and humor to a surprising list of great American songs to which she is almost religiously devoted. I should know. I tried to argue with her about some of them, and the doctor says the cast can come off in about a week. Kidding.
It's evidence that God exists on some level.
It's
that
everything.
Music is evidence that there is
something
divine.
Thank you. And as for you, dear listeners, I think I'll miss you most of all. So if you're social and you have media, please connect with us on Twitter and Instagram at Naked Songbook, on Facebook at TNA Songbook, and on the web at NakedAmericanSongbook.org. You can also call the Naked American Listener line at 347-229-1343. That's 347-229-1343. Call, leave us a message, tell us what songs you're listening to, and more importantly, what skivvies you're wearing while you're listening. The Naked American Songbook is a production of the Jonathan Channel, WNYC, and WQXR in New York City. Aaron Dalton makes everything and everyone sound great. Ellie Smerling is our fact checker. Rachel Neal was our recording engineer. Mike Shobe steers the ship. And Graham Parker signs the checks. At least I'm told he will sign the checks. Our theme music was written and performed by me. I'm Julian Fleischer, your host. Thank you for listening. As my guest Chris Noth likes to say,
kick your shoes off, baby.
But otherwise, keep it naked.
Where's the whiskey?